Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Welcome back to the Nerd Cave. You know, it's getting close to Christmas time, and do you know how the fat man makes it all the way around the world delivering all those presents?
I have a hunch.
He's on that Strike Force energy.
So nothing to do with reindeers?
Well, I mean, that's how you get... I mean, to stay awake and travel all the way around the world, you got to get jacked up on some Strike Force energy. By the way, it's Garner's podcast brought to you by Strike Force Energy. And they deliver worldwide just like Santa Claus. So, you know, if you got some, like, you know, caffeinated elves dropping packages down your chimney, you know, it's got to be that Strike Force. And if you use promo code CigarNerds, you'll get 20% off your orders.
And that's good for orders and subscriptions. So, you know, yep. I think now that we've, you know, really kind of, I mean, we're big advocates of Strike Force, obviously. But, I mean, hell, we've turned our friends on it, our family on it. Everybody that tries it just falls in love with it. And I got to say, like, you know, I would drink Monsters or, you know, some of the other energy drinks out there, and they leave you with this, you know, kind of a crash afterwards, if they even pep you up at all. And there's no crash or anything with Strike
Force. Hashtag kick the can.
Yes.
And also, you know, if you're a drinker like we are, you know, Strike Force is, you know, they've got a whole bunch of drink recipes where you can incorporate some Strike Force into your drinking. I hear the Strodka, which is Strike Force and vodka, is quite popular. If you're in the club, you need to, you know, be, you know, all the way up, you know, a little Strike Force and vodka get you going.
I like it.
If you're not a drinker, Strike Force and sweet tea, also very good. Tastes kind of like an Arnold Palmer.
I think that's my nectar.
Yeah. And speaking of veteran-owned companies, what are we smoking this week, Brad? Because we've kind of gone with a military theme with this week's cigar as well.
Yeah, so we're smoking the Camacho, the Czech Six.
Yeah, this is the new part of their Brotherhood series, which the first one was the Shellback that we reviewed a while back. And like I said, this one's the Czech Six. You know, if anyone doesn't know, you know, checking your six means, you know, watching your back. And the label says, watching your back since 1962.
Yep, not only watching your back, but also your brother's backs. And that's one of the things, you know, reading the label and everything that really kind of, you know, jumped out at me is, you know, there's a quote that says, we all have those people in our lives we know have our back. You know, it's understood that you'll have theirs as well. So this is a cigar to share it with for those special individuals.
Yeah, this one is it's a 6x50 Toro with a three nation blend of tobaccos with the original Corojo from Honduras, the Dominican San Vicente, and the Criollo 98 tobaccos from Nicaragua with the Criollo 98 binder and a Ecuadorian Habano 2000 wrapper to give it a little spicy kick.
Yeah, so, you know, all of that basically summed up is this is going to be a full-strength cigar. You know, we're just getting into the first third. I've been wanting to check, you know, this cigar out for quite a while since I've seen it on the shelf. You know, one of the cool things that I liked is if you choose to buy a box of this cigar, is it actually comes with a challenge coin. So we were talking about the shell back, you know, coming with the compass and stuff like that prior to doing this segment. So I don't know. I thought it was really cool, really interesting. You know, always want to be there to support the veteran community. And, you know, that really ties in kind of with what we're going to talk about and, you know, who we've dubbed our Cigar Nerd of the Year.
Yeah, this is our 2016 edition Cigar Nerd of the Year. Last year we gave it to Ron Perlman, and kind of the criteria is someone who, whatchamacallit, enhances cigar lifestyle, promotes the cigar lifestyle and the cigar culture through, you know, their roles and, you know, and, you know, just being a cigar nerd in life. So this year we're talking about Stallone, Mr. Rocky himself.
Yes.
Not to be confused with Rocky Patel, you know, the other Rocky.
Yeah.
And, you can talk about Rocky, you can talk about freaking Rambo, but, you know, those don't have a lot of cigars in them. So and that's such a big topic that those two characters kind of deserve their own episodes, and, you know, we'll get to them eventually. But so we're concentrating on his biggest smoking roles, which has to be the Expendables series.
Yes, and that's kind of the thing about, you know, Stallone is he, really wasn't public about his, you know.
Let's get into that once we get into the actual episode.
I mean, we could just segue right into it.
So with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
I am the shadow and the smoke.
Back to the show. As we said before, it's Cigar Nerd of the Year 2016. We're talking about the man, the myth, the legend, Sylvester Stallone.
Is he really a myth, though? I mean, he's a real person.
No, he's kind of mythical. I mean, the dude is 60, and he still looks like a total badass, so...
And he puts all of us to shame.
Yeah, I know. Like, I wish I was in that good of shape at 60. I'm like, hell, I'm 37, and I'm like not near that shape. Maybe I need to get on the roids or something.
Maybe we just need to smoke more cigars.
That's it. I mean, that's George Burns lived to like 100 plus, and he was like smoking like multiple cigars a day. Schwarzenegger, cigar smoker, who will also feature heavily in these these movies. And he's one almost, the only reason why we've not given it to him yet is because we've talked about so many freaking Schwarzenegger movies at this point that it's like we're out of stuff to talk about with Schwarzenegger.
Just when you think. He'll be back.
Yeah.
He's been back enough.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, and then, yeah, of course, Stallone, big star. So you were saying about his cigar lifestyle up to this point.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, it really wasn't something that he made publicly known there for a while. You know, it's just been in the last, you know, few years that... You know, his appreciation and, you know, that side of things is really, you know, started becoming more, you know, public knowledge, I guess, you know. I mean, you know, everybody always kind of, you know, saw him with a cigar occasionally, but never really, you know, took him, you know.
Yeah, he's been on the cover of Cigar Aficionado a couple times now and has done a few interviews with them. But, you know, as far as his acting roles, you know, until recently where he's become more of a director writer himself, where, you know, he's behind the movies instead of starring in someone else's movies, you know, we've, you know, started to get a lot more of him bringing, you know, his personal love of cigars to films. Like, I'm convinced he only made the Expendables movies so he could smoke cigars with his friends. That was like the whole point. I'm gonna get all my buddies together, we're gonna smoke cigars and
dude, you know, I'll tell you how that went down. Is all right, and you know, talking about the Expendables and the lineup of badasses, I don't care if you're talking about, you know, one, two, or three, but how can you make yourself appear, you know, even more badass amongst all the other badasses? You got to have that cigar.
Yes.
You know, taking a little jab at Arnold there.
Yeah, because him and Arnold both, through all three of these movies, are just blazing fat stogies, like 20, in the middle of a gunfight, you know, freaking have a cigar in his mouth.
That or, oh, we just, you know, blew up some shit, you know, fought a bunch of enemies, we're flying this plane. Why not just go ahead and crack open a couple of beers? And,
yeah.
You know, like.
Oh, yeah. This, you know, these movies is, like I said, I'm pretty sure it's just an excuse for him. Like, I want to go shoot guns and smoke cigars with my friends. So how do I get someone else to pay for that?
I mean, it worked. I mean, you know, and I got to say, like, you know, I mean, talking a little bit, you know, about his past roles as Rocky, you know, I really got to say, as a serious actor, you know, he is the badass, you know, I mean.
And that was the thing, you know, these three movies, as we'll, you know, get into them individually here in a minute, were basically like an homage to the great action movies of the 80s and early 90s that... Not that plot heavy, you know, it's just a good, dumb shoot 'em up. Like, you know, but like I said, being a child of the 80s, I mean, I grew up on Terminator and Rambo and hell, even, was it one of my favorite films growing up was Cobra with Stallone, where he was like this badass cop driving like a fucking hot rod and, you know, wearing sunglasses and chewing on a match the whole time.
Yeah. And, you know, there was such a sense of camaraderie and companionship and everything else. Like, I looked at, you know, these actors and I'm like, you know, these guys, you know, they go through thick and thin, you know, I mean, that's part of the reason we chose to check six is, you know, even as cold and, you know, as they say in the film, you know, we try to keep everything light until it's time to, you know, go dark and then we go pitch black.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there was a lot of aspects of that that I saw in, you know, how I interact with my friends and the type of people that I've kind of...
Yeah, and you see that a lot in, like, the, not just the military culture, but the law enforcement culture as well, or fire, you know, first responders, whatever. We tend to joke about some dark shit, because we deal with some dark shit, so you got
to
keep it light just
to
keep sane in this world.
And, you know, I mean, that's the thing, you know, I'm a civilian, I haven't served or, you know, did law enforcement or anything, but I guess, you know, I guess I just got a dark outlook on life or whatever, because I tend to be able to relate and, you know, the humor, the, you know, jokes and everything else. I mean, it's truly a brotherhood. And, you know, I guess that's one thing that I've always wanted to feel a part of was that, you know, fellowship and, you know, having each other's back and being able to be that level of support or, you know, just to be, you know, hey, I'm going through some shit and to, you know, be like, well, you're going through some shit because you're making dumbass decisions.
And before we get into the Expendables, some other great Stallone movies were, may not had cigars in them, but had some cool lines about cigars. I love Demolition Man. It's one of my all-time favorite, you know, how you should call it, like an action comedy, you know, because Wesley Snipes, who we'll talk about when we get to Expendables 3, is Simon Phoenix, the bad guy and stuff, and Stallone is this, almost like they are in this movie where it's, you know, this movie is an action film that should have been in the 80s. I mean, in this more modern, politically correct time frame, I mean, this movie is like is kind of out of place, and so was The Demolition Man in this whole, like, peaceful, nonviolent future, and he's just, you know, old school badass. But Edgar Friendly, played by Dennis O'Leary, has one that when he goes on this whole rant about freedom, and one of the things he says is like, I want to smoke a Cuban cigar the size of Cincinnati in a non-smoking section. That's his definition of freedom.
And I think we've quoted that a time or two. I don't know, you know, I mean, even go back as far as, you know, Rocky and First Blood, and, you know, once again, even though I didn't actually depict a cigar, it's like, all right, that guy just did something badass. Give that man a cigar.
Yeah. Do you know how that term got started? The whole, like, you know, close but no cigar, or, you know, because back, you know, 1800s, Wild West times, you know, some of these sideshow games, instead of going to the county fair and getting a stuffed bear for throwing darts or whatever, they would actually give out cigars as, like, prizes and stuff in some of these, like, you know, bar, you know, games and stuff. So, you know, close but no cigars was literally like, oh, you got close, but you didn't win a cigar.
That's pretty cool. I'd play more carnival games if that was the prize.
Yeah. I mean, I could throw some darts for some, if they're giving out cigars instead of those dumb teddy bears. Except for that game where you throw the ping pong ball in the fishbowl. That thing's rigged, man. There's no way in hell to get that fucking ping pong in the ball.
Well, that really wouldn't work anyway, because you just end up with a bunch of soggy cigars.
Let me put a nice Pelican case waterproof in there.
Yeah, but then it's going to be like $20 a throw.
Yeah. We can stop. We, at the mall today, we went to some watch shop, and they had these gold-plated Pelican cases for some fancy watch case. And now there's a travel humidor. if you want to bling, get the gold-plated Pelican case.
Get that with the executive suite.
But like I said, as Stallone's career has, you know, the later stage of career, he's kind of come into his own as a writer and director. This very first Expendables movie, which came out in 2010, was written and directed by Stallone. I mean, he kind of co-wrote it with some people, but yeah, this movie, as badass as that first one was, you know, all Stallone pretty much.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know, man. Like, it just, I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll just go ahead and jump into it. So, you know, here we're going to talk about Expendables. 2010 is when this was released.
And the cast, Stone playing Barney Ross, Jason Statham, which is more of a modern era action hero, playing Lee Christmas, Jet Li, you know, in the popular martial arts, you know, boom of the 90s, playing Yin Yang. You know, Dolph Lundgren, another classic action hero, the original Punisher. Plus, you know, he also fought Rocky back in the day as Ivan Drago, playing Gunnar Jensen, which kind of sounds a little bit like Gunnar Hansen. This might have been a throwback to some Leatherface. And then, of course, you know, the modern badasseries of the MMA. We got, you know, Randy Couture playing Toll Road, and Terry Crews playing Hail Caesar.
Don't forget about Stone Cold Steve Austin, man.
Yeah, I was just talking about the Expendables. And also, Mickey Rourke is kind of like their, you know, guy who sets up their businesses. But yeah, you get into the bad guys, it's still a collection of old action. You got Stone Cold Steve Austin playing the main henchman. And the main bad guy, which is a rogue CIA agent, is played by, what the hell's the name? It's Roberts is the last name. He's like, but he was the guy in Best of the Best and some of those old, like, you know,
Eric Roberts.
Yeah, Eric Roberts. Yeah, another, like, you know, 80s action star playing. And then, of course, the Arnold Schwarzenegger as the competing mercenary, and also Trench Mauser, which kind of sounds like some of, you know, Arnold's old roles. And then Bruce Willis as Church, the CIA agent that hires them to go, basically they're wanting them to overthrow this dictator in some tiny island country, but they find out that, oh, this guy's backed by an ex-CIA guy that's gone rogue and pretty much taken over the drug trade in this area.
Yeah, and I don't know, that's why you got to be careful about the little tiny islands that you visit.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. Like, I really enjoyed, you know, just kind of the whole premise of this movie. You know, they start out as, you know, oh, we're going to do a little bit of reconnaissance, just figure out, you know, what we're about to get ourselves into and if we want to take the job. And, you know, kind of seeing Stallone, you know, after, you know, what's the lady's name?
Their contact turns out to be, you know,
it's Sandra,
the dictator's daughter.
Yeah. But, you know, seeing her, you know, willingness to stay and fight, you know, really inspires Stallone to, hey, you know what? This girl stands for something. I can respect that. And
yeah, because
it doesn't hurt that she's just an absolute hottie.
Yeah, because Stallone's pretty much at the start of this movie is, and it's an old mercenary who has seen too much and you know, doesn't really care about anything anymore. And in fact, you know, it starts off him giving shit to his partner Christmas because he's, you know, involved with this girl, and he's like, you know, fucking relationships never work, blah blah blah. And then as soon as they get down there to the island, he meets the contact, and all of a sudden he's like, oh shit, how you doing?
But a little bit colder than that. I mean, you know, at first he's like, you know, is this a, I mean, you got to go into it thinking, hey, is this person, you know, just trying to set us up or whatever? But, I mean, the whole plot, you know, there, you know, with, all right, you've got the local, you know, tribe dictator Then you've got, you know, the freaking, you know, exec backing the drug trade, which is trying to take control of the island's army. And just that, that whole dynamic, and it's like, well, all right, so this is actually going to be a CIA setup where we got to take out one of our own without necessarily it being on any of our radars or anybody being able to tie anything back to us.
Mercenaries, which based out of Louisiana too, which was kind of cool, you know, seeing that, you know, the Louisiana countryside, or, you know, the bar side.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure, like, you know, because all these guys are like badasses driving motorcycles and stuff. I'm pretty sure most of those were. Looked like West Coast choppers, and yeah, except for Christmas, Statham has to be different. He's the only one riding a crotch rocket. Everyone else has these badass custom choppers.
I mean, but his bike though was nothing to scoff at.
It was pretty sweet. It had, it did have the Expendables logo on the side of the bike.
So yeah, that just watching, you know, freaking. Statham's character fucking, you know, doing work on the guys on the basketball court. That was fucking awesome.
Yeah, he comes back and finds out his girlfriend, played by, if any Buffy fans out there, Charisma Carpenter, has left him while he was on a mission. And, you know, he comes back and you know, goes to talk to her, and she's got, like, a black eye. And he's like, all right, I'm going to have to go regulate on this dude. And this goes and, like, beats the shit out of this guy and all his buddies. And then stabs his basketball and is like, next time, it's going in your chest.
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know, kind of interesting. And I wonder, you know, I mean, I see it a lot in, you know, some of the different pages and stuff like that that I follow where, you know, veteran guys come home to a shitty home situation or whatever where the girlfriend's like, oh, you're too distant and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's a fucking emotional roller coaster. And, you know, she's like, you're I don't even know what you do for a living or anything. And then after that scene, you know, after he kicks everybody's ass, it's like, now you know what I do.
Yeah. Because she's like, I don't even know what you do for a living. Was what she said earlier when he when she broke up with him. And, of course, you know, in the, you know, this movie, like I said, he's smoking a cigar most of the time, and at least in the first movie, it looks like it may be an Opus X, because you know, in the special thanks, it's that they thank, you know, Fuente Cigars, so it's kind of like obvious evidence that there's some Fuente products in that first movie.
Well, I mean, when it, you know, I think it's in the bar scene, and you know, it kind of zooms in close on the wrapper, and the Opus has a big bold in your face, you know. Rapper, and I was like, even though it's kind of turned down and away from the camera, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's an Opus, which it makes sense because Stallone has said that the Opus is his favorite cigar.
Yeah, it's one of those, if you got the money to smoke it, that's a good smoke. It's like, for me, that's like a...
That's my birthday or New Year's smoke.
Yeah, because it's, like I said, $20, $30, depending on which one you're getting. But yeah, Stallone.
And I think they just came out with a new one too, right?
Yeah, the 20th anniversary is coming out. I know the cigar shop we hang out has them. They're not on the shelf yet, so I don't know when they're actually going to hit the shelves. But it's the Opus Blue. And it's their 20th anniversary edition, and the box just looks badass. I kind of want it just the empty box.
Like, dude, you bought a box of Opus. I bought a box.
Yeah. I bought an Opus and a box. I did not buy a box of Opuses.
Yeah, when I start seeing some of the price tags, I'm like, oh, I really want to, but no. No.
But yeah, and not only, like I said, this, you know, the cigar smoking in this movie, but this is like, also, it inspired accessories. I know when this movie first came out, Zycar released a couple of special edition cutters and lighters and stuff. They had a Expendables edition lighter, knife, and even a limited edition cutter that was like, it was like a $500 cutter. It was made with bone, and it was shaped like a skull, and it even came with a shark skin carrying case.
Oh, that's freaking awesome.
But yeah, I think it was like a limited, like 500 edition run, and like I said, I was like, oh, I want that so
basically
bad. But,
the cast and, you know, immediate friends.
Well, they had, you know, they actually had it at the cigar shop when it first came out. I think they still have the cutter, But I'm like, yeah, that's just a little outside my my price range.
Oh, is that the
yeah, the one in the case that looks like a skull? That's the Expendables cutter.
Okay.
Yeah, like I said, he sold the knife and the lighter, but they still have one of the cutters on display.
I always kind of wondered that. Like it, and it's, I don't know. I mean, it's a magnificent work of art. That's the only thing I can say about it. Like, I try to not be one of those people that, like, every time a new accessory or gadget comes out catered to cigar smoking, you rush out and buy it. But that's one piece that you're just like... Yeah.
Except for that new round Zycar cutter, I'm definitely going to pick one of those up. I'm waiting on the Christmas sales.
Which will be upon us really, really soon.
Yeah. There's usually some
and
kind
then
of...
we can be done with this shitty year. Holy crap.
Yeah, this has been a... Speaking of Expendables, damn, this year's been been rough. But yeah, the fight scenes in this movie, too, are not something you... Yeah, not just, you know, gun battles, but, like, just the physical fight scenes were something that not seen in a long time. I think one of my highlights is, you know, Dolph Lundgren's character basically is just completely strung out and they can't trust him anymore. They go on a mission to take out, you know, some Somali pirates and he just goes batshit and tries to hang one of them. So they have to fire him from the team and he ends up, you know, sort of working for the bad guys. He kind of has a change of heart and tries to protect him, but then he gets in.
It's amazing what a shot placed 2 inches above your heart will do to a man.
Yeah, that'll straighten you out. But yeah, the fight scene with him versus Jet Li is so hysterical because... I mean, Jet Li's a short dude anyway, but next to, like, Dolph Lundgren's giant ass, it looks like he's fighting a midget. Yes.
And, I mean, that's one of the things that I really liked about the Expendables is, you know, talking about the martial arts, which is really cool. But, I mean, it's a good mix of just all-around action. You get a lot of hand-to-hand, you get a lot of gunplay, you get some sword play, and, you know, then later on, we get some parkour and...
Yeah. And Christmas is, you know, knife throwing through the whole movie is pretty wicked. Like, I want a dartboard to learn how to throw knives. I mean, that just was inspirational.
Yeah, the tattoo shop that they hang out in, you know, which is kind of, I guess, home base, you know, just them, you know. And I don't, who is the guy that did
That's
all...
Mickey Rourke.
Okay, so yeah, you know. I mean, he was nothing to scoff at, you know, as far as his knife skills either. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that whole, you know, kind of shit talk and, you know, everything between him and Christmas, you know, is just absolutely, you know, freaking phenomenal. I mean.
And that's one, he has one of the coolest speeches in the movie, too, because after they go down there and find out what's really going on, you know, they want to drop the case, but... Barney starts feeling guilty about leaving this girl behind that wanted to stay and fight, even though they tried to get her to leave when they left. But you know, she's like, you know, I can't leave my people. And he's like, I can't get this girl out of my head, you know, and Mickey Rourke's character, Tool tells him this story about, he's like, you know, I've killed all these people, but at one point I was, you know, in some country and I saw this girl standing on a bridge and she looked right at me and I just turned and walked away and I heard the splash. Like, so, you know, after all these lives I took, the one life I could have saved, I didn't. And that's when, you know, I lost the, you know, the rest of my soul, you know. So that kind of inspires him to, you know, do the right thing and go back and try to save this girl and complete the mission.
Yeah, that was, you know, a pivotal moment. I mean, you know, that's really where I, you know, Stallone's humanity really, you know, came through, you know? I mean, up to that point, like, yeah, if you were his brother, he had your back to a T, you know? He might have been a hard-ass, you know? He's kind of like that overbearing father that, you know, people's like, oh, this guy's an asshole or whatever. Well, he's an asshole because he cares enough to confront, you know, in a sense. And
I love, you know, Arnold didn't have the huge part in this one, but I love the interaction with him, Stallone and Bruce Willis when... Because they're both like kind of competing for the job, and Bruce Willis is telling him a thing, and he's like, and Schwarzenegger's like, you'd have to be an idiot to take this job, and Stone's like, so what is it? And he's like I said, you'd have to be an idiot to take this job, and then you know he kind of tells him what's going on. He's like, just give the job to my friend here. He likes playing in jungles, you know, kind of like just like a shot at Rambo.
Yes.
And then when he walks out, Bruce Willis is like, what's his problem? And he's like, I don't know. I think he wants to be president because at that time he was governor.
Governor,
when this,
yeah.
When this movie came out.
So, you know, I thought that was awesome. And just, I mean, the throwbacks to all the characters, you know, whether it's, you know, John McCain or, you know, it's freaking, you know, Jason and some of his roles are, you know, freaking, you know, Arnold as Terminator, like all of their little puns and catchphrases and them using, you know, those like, oh, I'll be back. No, you've been back enough. I'll be back.
Yeah. And
that or it's, you know, Arnold and Yippee-ki-yay.
And like I said, as he's been going, pretty much you can't kill anybody without making a smart-ass remark, which was like a staple of the 80s and 90s action stars. It's like, you can't just fight somebody. You have to make a quip before you you take them out.
I mean, but I feel like that should always be a thing.
It's like that movie Last Action Hero. You know? He's like, you can't just punch a guy in the face. You got to, you know, say something cool first. Like, you know, if you hit him with a surfboard, you got to say, like, you know, surf's up. Yeah, this movie, you know, $82 million to make, made $274 million and got two sequels out of it. Next up was Expendables 2. Which came out in 2012, which was still written by Stallone, but directed by Simon West, and added a, you know, each movie they've added a few more characters. Like in this one, the bad guy is Jean-Claude Van Damme, playing some kind of like Eastern European terrorist or something. And it's kind of hilarious because when I was reading some of the articles about it, Stallone, you know, personally approached Van Damme to have a part in the first movie, and Van Damme was like, this shit's never going to work. This, you know, this character doesn't have enough range, or he's like, I don't want to do it. And then, like, you know, when the first one blew up, I think like Stallone called him back and was like, guess what, motherfucker? And he's like, all right, I'll be in the next one. So we got him. And then we, of course, got freaking Chuck Norris. I mean, it almost completed the dream team of, you know, 80s badasses. And I love, cause you know, in this one, they've added, a young kid, Billy the Kid, which, you pretty much knew he was going to die right from the beginning because they, you know, anytime there's a hopeful character, it's like, yeah, that's not going to be good for him.
Yeah, but I got to say, I do not want to be at the end of his, the receiving end of his rifle.
No, that whole, because like, all these movies start with like a kind of an opening action sequence. And
yeah,
this
that's
one,
the thing. Like, you get no backstory, no nothing. No. Like, it's just balls to the wall.
Yeah, and they show up in this this town and is like doing a, trying to rescue somebody. And it gets there and turns out it's freaking Schwarzenegger. And he was sent in to rescue some kidnapped Chinese billionaire and got caught. So they rescue, had to rescue both of them. He's like, I hate freaking having to, this is embarrassing. I hate having to owe you one. And then he's like, I need a gun. And he goes to Terry Crews. He always has like the giant AA-12 full auto shotgun. He's like, I need a gun. You got a big gun. Give me your gun. And Terry Crews is like, my big gun's hanging right where it's at. He's like, come on, you've got a backup. Let him have it. He's like, okay, but I better get it back. And this is freaking, yeah. But on the way out, man, the freaking sniping action with that dude is dangerous with a 50 cal. But it, like any old cop movie, the sooner you're second, like, you know, I'm going to retire, you know he's going to die. So when he's like, you know, Barney, I want to finish out the month and I'm going to go live happily ever after with my girlfriend. You're like, oh, sorry, kid. You're not going to be in the sequel.
Yeah, that. You know, I mean, that was pretty powerful, though. I mean, you know, like, I don't, you know, because you saw it in the first film, you know, where if they got themselves in a fucked up situation where they are surrounded or whatever, they always kind of had some kind of badass out, you know. But that was the one time that, you know, you see them, all right, we lay down our arms and, you know, the whole nine yards, you know, and like the entire time you're like, nah, they're not gonna really kill the kid, you know. Something, you know, is going to.
Yeah, because Van Damme's like, you guys are warriors. I'd respect warriors. You know, y'all shouldn't die like dogs. So, you know, we're gonna take what we came for, and you know, y'all just keep your heads down until we get till we leave. But you know, the kid's like, I ain't scared of you, and he's like, you gotta. Sometimes you have to teach respect, and this freaking just runs him through with like Barney's knife, and then keeps it.
Yeah, like the whole freaking, like, you know, roundhouse kick to the knife into the heart, like,
because of course it's Van Damme, he has to do a roundhouse kick.
Well,
that's,
you know,
like, that's a, I think required in his contract that he's going to do a badass roundhouse.
Well, that's, you know, talking about Chuck Norris, I was waiting on that, like, no, you know, the fucking lone wolf, you know, has to do a roundhouse or something. It's just not Chuck Norris. And
Chuck's getting up there, so he may be like, I'm done with roundhouses.
But he had a sweet operator beard.
Yeah, because and Killing the Kid made this one like personal. You know, it wasn't just like they're there for money. You know, and you know they're going to, because originally when he gets killed, they're going to find this computer that tells where these nuclear weapons are buried in some, like, you know, former Russian country.
Yeah, some kind of mine.
And these terrorists who all have, like, freaking, you know, devil goat tattoos on their necks are trying to steal these nukes to basically sell them to the highest bidder. And have pretty much taken over this whole town and enslaved the population. But instead of, you know, this time they're, you know, it's personal because they're like, you know, once they bury the kid, they're like, what do we do? And he's like, we track him, we find him, we kill him. That's our only plan.
Yeah. This should have been like, you know, The Expendables Avenge or something.
I mean, see, this one, you know, bigger budget, $100 million, made $305 million. Like, so these movies have not lost any money, which almost like the, you know, Fast and the Furious franchise. People love just dumb action movies.
Well, I mean, I gotta say, though, I mean, it really wasn't dumb in a sense. I mean, because it's...
It had a plot to it. I mean, it was... You know,
I mean, it wasn't
you
just
cared about the characters. It wasn't just a straight, you know, violence.
It didn't feel like Kung Fury.
Yeah.
As badass as Kung Fury is, I mean, you know, you legitimately were invested in the characters. And, you know, most action movies, that's what you're there for, is to see the sequences. But, you know, here it's, you know, oh shit, you know, how do they pick themselves up and, you know, rally together and everything from that aspect. So,
and I do like this, like, you know, when they're trying to track these people down, they go into this bar to find some soldiers that they can interrogate. And they're like, what is your plan? He's like, we're going with a classic. And him and Statham put on brass knuckles and go in there and beat the hell out of everybody. And yes. He's like, you can't beat a classic, which, yeah, they're all kind of classics. And then they end up in this old Russian, like, base that's done up to look like 80s America, where they trained back during the Cold War, and it's like this abandoned facility, and they get attacked and get, you know, pinned down. Then all of a sudden, somebody shoots everybody, right as they're about to, like, run out of ammo and die, and here comes freaking Chuck Norris. It just, like, took all these dudes out, and he's like, where's your team? He's like, I'm alone. He's like... don't have a teamwork by myself. He's like, yeah, I heard you were a bit of a lone wolf. Just the freaking little, like, jabs at, like, people's, like, past characters always cracks me up.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's why, you know, we grew up with those movies. So,
and I think
mean,
it's Couture even. It's like, I heard you got bit by a cobra. And he's like, I did. And after 5 days of agonizing pain, the cobra died. It's like, just the freaking Chuck Norris jokes. Yes.
Yeah. I wonder if that's what started the whole Chuck Norris memes.
Like, oh, no, that was before that. That's why they kind of make that joke, because, like, yeah, that was even before all the freaking Chuck Norris memes were blowing up everywhere. Underneath Chuck Norris's beard is another fist.
Damn. You got to keep talking.
Or was it the Chuck Norris... epic rap battle where he's like, I'll choke you out with the black belt that I wear around the beard that I grow on my dick.
That needs to be a closing quote. Fuck.
But they're like, why are you here? And he's like, I've been killing these terrorist guys. It's good money. Which, yeah, that should always be a thing, you know, killing terrorists. Good business.
But yeah, I mean, the whole, you know, scene where the fucking tanks are rolling in and everything, like, shit has truly hit the fan. But
oh, yeah, and when they finally get to the mine and go in attacking the mine, and the mine gets blown up and they're trapped, you know, underground, and they're all like, you know, probably going to die. Freaking Stallone's got his cigar out, you know, smoking it. And all of a sudden, like, Dolph Lundgren gets up. He's like, I can make a bomb. He's like, I just need this, and this. And he starts, and Jason Statham's like, what the hell is he doing? He's like, I think he's making a bomb. He's like, no way. Gunner, what are you doing? Making a bomb. He's like, okay. He's like, so he starts all this other stuff, and Stone's like, well, he is a chemical, doesn't have a degree in chemical engineering. Maybe we should listen to him. Which is funny, because legitimately, Dolph Lundgren is a freaking genius. He basically got into, you know, his you know, thing that they tell the story about him, like, you know, that he was, like, before he got all cracked out, was, you know, had a freaking degree in chemical engineering from MIT, which, you know, dumb people don't get into MIT. And that's true, pretty much. You know, freaking, you know, he, you know, could have had a career in science, but he was like, this is boring. I'm going to go become a bouncer and a stuntman and then eventually, like, an action star. So Dolph Lundgren is not the the dumb brute that he portrays in movies. He's legitimately a freaking smart-ass dude. And could probably have built a bomb in a cave, but it didn't quite work out. He's like,
I mean, it really wanted to.
Yeah, he's like, stuff must have been wet. He's like, good try, Gunner. But then, of course, freaking Arnold shows up to save him, and he's like, in
with
this
big fucking mind drill.
Yeah, smoking a cigar, and like leans out, and he's like, I'm back.
Where have we heard that line before?
Yeah. I believe that was on a couple of all of the Terminator movies.
And it was in all the films ever.
Yeah, and I like, you know, the freaking Stallone and Bruce Willis get into it at one point. And he's like, you're just too much of a pussy to do this stuff yourself. That's why you hire us to, you know, you're a guy who's used to giving orders and not getting your hands dirty. So he shows up with, you know, Arnold to rescue them. And then they all kind of go after of Van Damme's character, because they're trying to go to the airport and sell these nukes, and they get in this huge gun battle, which that has some of the best freaking one-liners. You know, it is funny. Every, you know, Chuck Norris shows up and like shoots a bunch of people again, but every time he shows up, they play this kind of little bit of like a Western theme.
Yes.
You know, a little Walker, Texas Ranger throwback there. But then the interaction between Bruce Willis and Schwarzenegger is hysterical. We're in the middle of the fight. And he's like, I'm running low on ammo. I'll be right back. He's like, you've been back enough. I'll be back. And then he walks up. He's like, yippee-ki-yay. And he shows up with this freaking smart car. Like, Arnold pulls the door off. He's like, my shoe is bigger than this car.
Yeah, like, my foot is bigger than this car.
Yeah. And like, them two, like, you know, doing drive-bys in a smart car is with Arnold, like, just barely squeezed in it.
Oh, that was just freaking awesome.
And then when it gets down
to... Can you really get a smart car to drift through a parking deck?
Apparently you can.
Or was it... I don't know. I think it was a building more so than a parking deck.
No, they were actually in the airport riding around shooting people in this thing. And then you get the badass fight scene with Statham and Van Damme's right-hand man. You know, kind of a Indiana Jones-esque ending where he throws him into the helicopter blades.
Yes.
And then, of course, you get the final battle with Stallone versus... Van Damme, and you know, he tells the girls, like, nope, this is my fight. You know, I'm going in there. If anyone but me comes out, shoot that motherfucker. But until then, don't interfere. This is personal. And yeah, like, of course, you get the traditional Van Damme spinning heel kick. Yes. That he has to do, and he jumps up, kicks him in the face. He goes down. And he's like, I'm getting back up, and he does it again. He's like, and you're back down.
It's always, that whole scene, you know, it's like, they strip off all their gear, all their weapons, the whole nine yard, like.
Yeah, because eventually he runs out of ammo or something like that, and he's like, you can kill me, or do you want to man up? And he's like, oh, I'll man you up. And takes off all his guns, and just, they get in a good fight.
And then Stallone walks out and nearly gets his ass lit up.
It's me. Oh, yeah, and like, you know. Runs him through, you know, the almost like how was it, Mickey Rourke in Iron Man 2 with the whips, where he gets the, you know, finally, you know, Van Damme picks up, you know, Barney's knife, and freaking he pulls out the chain, starts whipping him with the chains, and finally like wraps that thing around his neck and just pulls him into the knife. I was like, that's a bat. He's like, this one's for Billy, because he's like, you know, what was that kid's name I killed again? And like, you know, he doesn't say anything until he, you know, kills me. He's like, his name was Billy. Freaking just twists the knife in his chest and cuts his head off. Or he goes like, do you know how to carve a turkey? When they come back out, Bruce's like, did you get him? He's like, oh yeah. Just like throws a bag with his head in it.
He's like, oh, that's brutal.
He's like, nice touch, but kind of brutal. And I love that line too, because he's like, you know, as they're leaving, you know, Chuck's in the plane. He's like, I thought you all worked alone. He's like, well, sometimes it's good to run with the pack. Besides, you've killed all my business up. You've killed all these. I don't have anyone to kill anymore. I'm about to go find a new job. And then, you know, Bruce Willis is like, yeah, I've got y'all a present, because they crashed their plane into the mine. Yeah, so he gets in this old beat up plane to fly home, and he's like, "I think it should be in a museum." And Arnold's like, "We all should be."
Speaking of the plane, like that was, you know, kind of throwing back to the first film a little bit.
Yeah, with the hidden 50 cal up front. That,
well, not
machine
only
gun.
The hidden 50 cal, but then, you know, like the whole part where, you know, they fly over the dock, you know, originally on the reconnaissance mission, and
yeah, because they escape,
just dump
and Stallone's
all the freaking
like,
fuel and just light that shit. And
yeah, because like, they, you know, they originally escape, and then Stallone's just like, "No, I can't let those assholes get away. Let's make another pass. A little turn and burn." And then I said, "You just shoot the hell out of everything, and then dump the external fuel tanks and light it up." And then the second one, you get something else where it's like, you know, this time they've, because I think that at that point the plane was painted up to look like a, I think it was a fake animal rescue operation.
Yeah, it was then, a you know, some kind of animal conservatory.
Yeah, and then this one they've got like Santa Claus like splattered on the front of the plane with like all these packages going down the side, some delivery service, and when they're trying to escape, they're on like this river, and there's a like a barricade across the river. He's like, "Go wake up Santa Claus!" And now they've got a freaking howitzer in the nose of the plane.
And it's like I love it too, because they take the first shot and it's like, "Hey, you missed!" And it's like, "You're aiming."
Oh yeah, and it's like freaking. And, you know, of course, in this one, you know, Jet Li, you know, kind of disappears. He's there for the opening action sequence, and then he kind of semi-retires and goes off to take that dude back. So you don't have him in the rest of it. But his fight scene in the beginning where he, like, runs out of ammo and he's fighting, like, six or seven dudes with machetes, and he's whooping everybody's ass with a couple frying pans. Which is kind of like he used to do in, like, in his movies. It's all about improvised weapons in his, like, classic movies. So it was kind of cool seeing him whoop ass with frying pans again.
Yeah, I think that's what kind of made these films feel more genuine is, you know, it wasn't, you know, the same characters, you know, they stuck to their traditional, you know, methods of combat for the most part. And, you know, I think that's what made the dynamic work, you know, between that and just the throwbacks to...
And Dolph Lundgren hitting on their Maggie, their CIA helper on this one. It's funny as hell because like they're all talking about what you would eat if it was your last meal, and she, you know, talks about something, and then she looks at Stallone and they're like, "I might have Italian though." You know, she's got like, a little thing for him, and then Gunner is like, "Yeah, I'd like, you know, my favorite Swedish dish is like, you know, fermented whale ass or some shit like that." He's like, "But I'd really die for some Chinese." And Stallone looks at her and he's like, "I think you're gonna starve to death, brother."
Damn.
Oh, yeah, and how was it the... And that gets us to... Actually, kind of one of my favorite ones, the last one, Expendables 3, which this one kind of went new school versus old school.
Yeah, and I, you know, I think I'm with you, is, you know, this one, it was really awesome seeing a bunch of the old cats... You know, but then we got a lot of new people introduced as well, and, you know.
This one directed by Patrick Hughes, and, you know, $90 million budget, made $206 million. You know, it wasn't as successful as the previous one, but still made, you know, doubled its money. Yeah, because this one, it starts off, you know, Jet Li's still not around, and the opening action sequence is them raiding this prison train, who has a former expendable who's been in prison for 8 years, which is the man, the myth, freaking
Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes, yes. Blade himself. And yeah, that whole sequence of him, like, yeah, escaping the train is just badass. Where he just, you know, blew up that whole prison because he's like, "Fuck these people." And then when he's on the plane, they're like, "We're not going home yet. We're going to this other mission." And he's talking to the guys and they're like, "So what were you in prison for?" And he's like, "Tax evasion." Oh, because it's like I said, it's funny. He was that's what he actually went to jail for, was tax evasion.
Yeah, and, I think it was pretty cool too, just, you know, him kind of giving, you know, shit to, you know, some of the other guys,
yeah,
you know, especially about the blade and everything.
Yeah, because, you know, Jason Statham's character, his especially is the knives, and that was, you know, Wesley's job back in the day, and he's like, "Well, I'd like to help you on this mission, but
you mean
I ain't got
blades.
My...
good with blades."
Yeah. But he's like, "I would help you on this mission, Barney, but I ain't got my shit." And he's like, hands him, like, this, like, you know, badass, like, knife rig. He's like, oh, that's my shit. And he's like, yes, it is. Dr. Death was his nickname, because he actually was a medic at some point.
But, yeah, it was just badass fucking watching him shave, you know, all the facial hair and everything else. And I mean, when they first rescue him, I didn't even recognize that to be Wesley Snipes, because I was like, it looks familiar, but all the hair, I'm confused.
Yeah, until he shaves, you're like, who the hell is this dude?
And I was like, oh, shit.
And, you know, this one also introduced the new bad guy, another 80s action staple, freaking Mel Gibson.
Yes.
Who he's a former expendable turned rogue that, you know, they tried to kill him and they thought he was dead, but now he's kind of reemerged with a new identity, and he's this just international gun dealer who has just fucked up tons of shit, and you know, and he just almost destroys the team, because I mean the whole sequence with Dr. Death just parkouring and jacking people up right and left. I mean, and freaking Couture is like, damn, he's good. And Statham's like, yeah, shut up. And then he does some other badass stuff. He's like, damn, he really is good. He's like, I will shoot you if you say that again. It's like, he's like, this dude's trying to take my role. But, you know, Mel Gibson, you know, ends up shooting Terry Crews and putting him in the hospital and almost blowing up the entire team. So Stallone is like, you know, at this point, he's like, I've lost so many brothers, I can't stand to lose anymore. So he fires the team for their whole protection and decides to build a new team to go after this guy, because where it would be young people that he's not going to, they don't matter to him. He doesn't know him. You know, he's kind of gone dark, and he's like, this is going to be a suicide mission. I don't want to get my brothers killed, so I'm going to take this new group of guys, which consisted of Galgo, played by freaking Antonio Banderas, John Smiley, Kelly Lute, Luna, Ronda Rousey, and was it Thor? It was Glenn Powell and Mars Victor Ortiz, which is another, you know, bringing some more UFC fighters. And we got Victor Ortiz, we got Ronda Rousey. I gotta say, you know, Ronda may have a career in acting if she, you know, gives up the whole fighting thing, because she was legitimately badass in this movie.
Yeah, you know. That's off. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you see with some of these like fighters that try to make the jump to movies aren't that great of actors, but you know, Couture has been badass. Ronda Rousey was badass. Even, what's his name in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Batista.
I mean, he's been in a few movies now, and he's always like,
character. I mean, don't forget about, you know, The Rock. I mean, that's probably one of the most, you know, iconics, but I mean, even Steve Austin, I mean, for, you know, his role and everything else, like, I legit, you know, took him serious, and, you know, he did a damn good job, which, we've talked about it a little bit on previous episodes, but, I mean, you know, by and large, these people that, you know, are more so, I think, from the, you know, WCW, WWE, whatever the hell it is now, I mean, they're legit, you know, having to act and, you know, make what you're seeing believable without, you know, absolutely destroying each other, you know, careers and everything. Yeah. So, you know, but, you know, Ronda Rousey and, you know, UFC, I mean, it's a lot more raw in your face. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of acting involved in that, but she's
you
cool
know,
as
just
hell.
Watching her, you know, actually, you know, doing some of the UFC stuff on these guys and doing work on them is just freaking awesome.
Oh, and they also in this movie, we got Kelsey Grammer, who is like, basically he's a mercenary recruiter. And when Stallone wants to build the new team, he goes to him to like, you know, hey, find me some guys. And there's a whole sequence of him going around meeting these different people to join the team. And when they go to see Ronda Rousey, they're in like some nightclub in New York or whatever. And she's like high heels, tight dress, looking hot as hell. And then, like, a fight breaks out. She's like, oh, I got to go take care of this. And, like, and he's like, so who
Stallone's are we like, where's the bouncer?
You know, he's like, who are we here to see? He's like, the girl in the red dress. He's like, the hostess? No, she's the bouncer. And, like, fucks up these, like, three or four dudes. And Stallone's like, I could do that. He's like, yeah, but can you do it? Or he's like, go put on a red dress and try it. And he's like, and she's even better when she's not in heels.
Yes. Like, shit, I'd break my neck three times over.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, that was badass. And then, like I said, you got the new guys, like the ones the hacker dude, and the one guy's like the motorcycle guy, and like I said, and of course you freaking Galgo is like, you know, he's kind of like an old school guy that keeps putting out fake resumes so he can get in. They're like, God damn it, this is like the third time this month you've tried to like get a job. Like, we're not hiring you. You're too old for it.
Well, and I, you know, we've talked about the lineup. One of the people we did not talk about was Harrison Ford.
Yeah, you know, Bruce Willis was not in this movie because he wanted too much money. So they replaced him. The new, his church's boss shows up, Major Drummond, who is freaking Harrison Ford. And he's definitely a lot more badass than his previous CIA guy.
Yes. But yeah, I don't, you know, it's just badass watching him pilot and everything else. Yeah. Like,
because, of course, you know, they go to capture, you know, Mel Gibson with the new team, and they all get jacked up, and, you know, Stallone barely makes out alive, but the whole team gets captured, and he's like, hey, if you want to rescue him, I'm giving you 48 hours, and I'm killing these kids. So he pretty much knows he's walking into a trap. So, you know, it's just going to be him, and, you know, finally Antonio Banderas shows up and just convinces him. He's like, I need this. Like, there's only one thing I do well, and that's kill people. I do it very well. Like, he's like, but this is like a one-way trip. He's like, one-way trip is better than a no-way trip is what I'm doing now. So I'd rather, you know, die for the cause. So he's like, all right. But the dude just does not shut up.
Yes.
And then, you know, when they're going to leave, the team shows up and he's like, what are y'all doing here? And he's like, you're the only one dumb enough to do this on your own. And we're the only people dumb enough to help you. So he's like, all right, get in the plane. Sorry, I fired you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of, you know, I think the line was more so to the fact it's like, you know, we'll die with you. Just don't ask us to do it twice.
Yeah, because that was in the first movie, because, again, Stallone tried to go back to that island on itself, and the team shows up and like, no, you're not going by yourself. Like, we'll die for you, Barney. Just don't ask us to do it twice. And that's pretty much the sentiment there. They're like, you know, this guy fucked up our friend. You're not doing this on your own. We're going with you. And when they go in there to the rescue the team, they find out it's a trap and just get surrounded. And it's just such badass that these 10 dudes, like, just taking on a whole freaking army. But, you know, when Harrison Ford figured out what's going on, he's like, all right, we're going to go rescue these idiots. So, you know, he calls in, an exit team, which turns out to be Schwarzenegger and Jet Li shows back up. And he's like, you know, is this, you know, all you got? And he's like, it's all we need, you know, short notice and all. He's like, are you coming with us, Major? He's like, where's your team? He's like, I don't have a team. You know, this is off the books. You know, I'm not even here. And like, takes off his name tag. And he's like, great, none of us are here. Let's go do this. Yes. And then he shows up in that freaking Huey which is kind of an old school chopper in himself, just like the rest of the guys, and just starts blowing shit up.
I mean, but he's freaking barrel rolling the Huey and everything else. Yeah. Like, I mean, just legit badass.
Some freaking Han Solo shit right there. Which he's like a legitimate pilot himself. You know, he's a helicopter pilot. Harrison Ford's like, can do some of that shit.
So I enjoyed the shit out of this film, and you know, I mean. You know, I really loved, you know, the soundtrack in these films, you know, were just badass.
Yeah.
You know, and I really love, you know, there at the closing.
That song Come With Me is good. And then, like, yeah, that once they save everybody and go to the bar and
they have the karaoke.
The new kids and the old kids, and the new kids all got their tattoos now. They're official expendables. They're not just the B team anymore. They've come into the Brotherhood.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I do like Antonio Banderas. He's like, I really think I would be an asset. He's like, all right, you can stay. And he's like, great, because I already got the tattoo.
Oh, yeah. The fact that he would not shut up. Like, there at the beginning, I'm like, all right, this guy needs to die. Like, I almost felt like he was going to be the next death, because I was just like, he doesn't fit the dynamic, yeah. You know, and, you know, kind of.
And that was the thing, too, because he was like, one of the reasons why he was so gung-ho is he finally's like, you know, why'd your team fire me? He's like, they didn't fire me. They're not around anymore. And he's like, basically, you know, said that they were part of the Benghazi thing, and basically they got left behind, and pretty much his whole team was wiped out, and he was the lone survivor. So he's kind of got this whole survivor's guilt thing, and he wants to, you know, die for the cause pretty much, but yeah, luckily he's good enough that he didn't, and managed to like fuck shit up while hitting on Ronda Rousey. I mean, that's the kind of man Antonio Banderas is. Yes. But yeah, Yeah, in the bar, as you're saying, like I said, once the new team starts doing karaoke.
I don't know, man. I just felt like that was really powerful. You know, you got all the old cats sitting there and the new cats, you know. Old man, you know, look at me. Like, just fucking awesome.
I'm a lot like you. And Statham and Stallone is like, why are you looking at them like you're a proud papa? Oh, yeah, I hope they do another one of these movies, and because I've heard there's been rumors of that for a while. Supposedly one coming out next year, but I'm not seeing any kind of cast list or anything on it
yet.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
so far
really
it's just
been,
all just rumor.
You know, so much speculation. I mean,
I've heard rumors that Jackie Chan may be involved, and
I mean, hell, I'm hearing, you know, that Stallone, you know, may be up in the air. You know, if he's going to have involvement or not, like I don't know, you know. I mean
these pretty much are his movies, so it's and the other good thing about this third movie is he finally got rid of that douchebag mustache. He looked weird with facial hair. It does not look like Stallone with the goatee.
Yeah, that kind of threw me. I was like, you're not taking it back.
No, he's like, just go ahead and go, like, you know, full Rocky, shave the beard, man. He's one of those guys that cannot have an operator beard. It does not look
right.
I mean,
maybe he can. He just can't have whatever the thing was. I can't even call it a goatee. Like,
no. Yeah, that was a little.
I don't even think that
side
qualifies as Fu Manchu.
Oh, yeah. And how was it? I like, because, you know, at one point when after Terry Crews gets hurt, Arnold says, I'm retired. You should retire too. This is like a young man's game or whatever. So when he shows up to save them all, he's like, I thought you said you retired. He's like, I lied. Just like, you know, he's like, I'll kill you last. I thought you said you'd kill me last. I lied.
Yes.
But now him and Jet Li are a team. That's the next movie. Instead of it being the Expendables, it's Schwarzenegger and Jet Li, doing missions. And the Expendables have to show up and save them, for a change.
You know what? That may very well be a thickening plot there.
Yeah. He's like, you're with Trench now? He's like, yeah, he pays me more. So now that we're kind of wrapping this up, what are your final thoughts on the Czech Six?
I want another one.
Yeah.
I haven't smoked too many Camachos, and I gotta say, I really enjoyed the Shellback. But this one here, I don't know, maybe it's the fuller flavor or whatever, but damn good cigar. And, you know, and that's even taking the principle behind the cigar out of the equation. I mean, if you were to ask, hey, man, you know, what's a cigar you could recommend to me? And, you know, somebody enjoys a full flavor cigar, I would put them on this in a heartbeat.
Because I do like that it's a stronger cigar, but it's not just overpowering. It has flavor to it. You know, a lot of, like, strong cigars, that's all they got is, like, the heat. But this one has a good balance of that power and flavor profile.
Yeah, I mean, I get a lot of complexity out of this cigar. And I think, you know, a lot of the filler combination there is what's doing it. I mean, you got a lot of regions that have gone into this cigar, and you know, different notes all come through. So there's not just one overpowering element. So it's a very good blend.
All right. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were. Old man, look at my life. Like a coin that won't get tossed, rolling home to you.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. It's time for Beer 30. So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
Well, this week we're drinking the Triple Burner by Brooklyn Brewery. And this is a licorice spice triple aged in white wine barrels.
Yeah, it's gives it a very interesting floral note.
Yeah, this
it's definitely got a licorice aftertaste to it.
I get the licorice, but I'm definitely picking up on the spice. Like I've actually got a little bit of a burn on my tongue from this. Like, it's interesting, you know. This is using Pilsner malts with let's see, licorice spice blend from the Air Love, Syracuse somewhere, Pearl and Ayura hops. This is a special Belgian yeast blend. That's actually a house blend to Brooklyn Brewery. This comes in at 10.6 ABV. And we are drinking it from the 22-ounce bomber, which I think's all that's available. But some of the food pairings that, you know, recommend is desserts, rich cheeses, grilled meats, spiritual oneness, warm salads, and yogurt flight. So
yeah, the spiritual oneness comes from the name Triple Burner, who in ancient Chinese medicine was responsible for the production and flow of energy throughout the body.
Yeah, so, you know, we talked about the darkness of Expendables and everything else. So with this beer, we thought we would bring some serenity, you know, to the mix and, you know.
Yeah, apparently the Triple Burner is not an actual organ of the body, but a sort of a spiritual water wheel that takes in food, water, light, and air and transforms them into life force known as ki. So this, you know, helps get your ki balanced if you want to, you know.
It's a ki or chi?
Chi, whatever. It's QI. It depends on how you pronounce it.
So, yeah, we are, you know, in our spiritual oneness, I foresee this leading to spiritual drunkenness.
Yeah, and it also says that the Triple Burner would also include licorice to encourage natural sweetness and a light, joyful presence, which kind of describes this beer pretty good.
Yes. You know, so this is the first time I've had this. You know, I definitely pick up on the wine taste, and you know, the aroma that you get from this is, I would say, more winey. You know, of a wine, you know, aroma more so than what I would traditionally think of beer. So the aging in wine barrels. I mean, we've done a lot of beers were aged in either rum cask barrels or, you know, bourbon barrels, all types of other things. But I think this is probably the first time we've done anything aged in wine.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has a very floral smell to it. And that being a Belgian triple as well is kind of a, you know, a light, airy beer to begin with. But that the wine just adds like that little bit of a floral, citrusy notes. And then the add of the liquor spice kind of gives it almost like a candy-like, you know, flavor to it. So I can see where they say, you know, pairing it with a dessert is a good idea.
Yes. You know, yeah, still leftover tobacco.
Not a panda hair?
No, not a panda hair. Poor pandas. That's the lab husky mix. So I think the house is held together by panda hair. You know, people talk about, you know, this having, you know, taste of figs, vanilla, mint. I either my palate isn't developed enough to pick up on all of those, or maybe the beer needs to come up more, you know, in temperature or something for some of those notes to come through. I'm with you. I get much more floral. But, you know, this to me drinks a little bit heavier than your traditional, you know, it's a little heavier sitting on the stomach than, you know, some of the other triples that I've had. So
yeah, triples are usually a little bit lighter beer, but yeah, this has definitely got some, you know, got some strength to it. Chug, chug, chug.
I don't think you want to chug this. This is not a chug beer. You know, this would be a good Christmas time beer. You know, to me, with the spice and everything else, this is, you know, it's warming.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I would say a good festive beer if you're, you know, out. This is, you know, unfortunately available only in, you know, select quantities. So it's, you know, naturally going to be a little bit more expensive. But, you know, if you happen to see this, I would recommend it, especially if you're somebody that enjoys wine.
And as you say, since it, you know, recommended as a Christmas kind of beer, you know, if you're having a special party, something like that, then, you know, maybe a nice $20 bottle of beer will, you know, be good for your, you know, holiday shenanigans.
Yes, absolutely. You know, for me, I think I'm at about a, you know, a 3.75 or so on this. It's not bad. Just some of the spice and stuff like that really isn't what I prefer. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, 3.75 Edge and Tour de Four, because it's a good beer. Like I said, it's a little bit, it's not something I would drink, you know, as a daily session beer, but special occasion, you know, maybe sitting down, you know, having this beer with a slice of cheesecake or something like that, you know, holiday it up. I could recommend this beer.
Perfect. And with that, we'll be right back.
There's a fair chance you don't like the news, and I get that. I'm Buzz Burbank, and I do a different kind of newscast I think you will like. I tell stories, true stories, because when you view it the right way, there's nothing more amazing than real life. I cover most of the stuff the big media outlets cover, but often with a different approach, richer in detail, and with a perspective that ties it all together so we have some idea of what it all means. I deliver stories that'll make you laugh, make you cry, and make you angry, because that is the nature of life, and because you cannot be a better citizen unless you understand and feel the news. I also don't cover some of the useless stories you'll find elsewhere, and do cover real stories the rest of the media somehow managed to avoid. With my nearly 40 years experience in broadcast journalism and a love of writing, this is a news program that's custom made for you. Buzz Burbank News and Comment is now a weekly show, new each Thursday and available free on iTunes, SoundCloud, and several other platforms, and at buzzburbank.com. In addition to the other shows you enjoy here on the ESO Broadcast Network, thank you for adding me to your playlist as well.
Yes, science! And welcome back. It's time for science. Are you ready to be like Dolph Lundgren and learn some science?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Based on our previous conversation, I don't know, but yeah. We'll go with it. We're already here.
Well, first up, have you heard of Chernobyl? And not the energy drink Chernobyl that'll let you go back in time in hot tub time machine. But Chernobyl, the Russian nuclear disaster.
Oh, yeah. You know, that thing that's been leaking for a while, huh?
Yeah. This year is the 30th anniversary of the Chernobyl explosion. If you don't know what that is, there was a nuclear power plant in Russia that overheated and exploded 30 years ago. And some of the images on the internet of the aftermath of this are some of the creepiest stuff, because there was a whole city right next door to the reactor that they had to evacuate and has been abandoned ever since. And you go on YouTube, there's some cool drone videos that people have, you know, flown through the city and took it like, as a, there's like still, you know, you go into the schoolhouse and there's still like books and stuff on tables, and there's a haunting image of the, there was like a fair in town, I guess, at the time. So there's like a big Ferris wheel in the middle of this, you know, abandoned town. Well, one of the things they did when the reactor blew was basically just buried everything in concrete. But, you know, with the radiation, which is still like, you know, in the base of it, still very deadly radioactive, concrete breaks down over time and it's starting to leak. And if it ever fully, core was ever fully exposed again, it would be a very bad environmental disaster. So, since, like, I believe they started this project in 2010, they came up with a way to basically cap the reactor. And they built this giant steel dome thing to cover it up. And they say, you know, once this thing is in place, you know, it will protect the site for at least 100 years. You know, then maybe by then it's someone else's problem. But this has kind of been a technological marvel because of the radiation, they can't build it on site. So, yeah, they had to build this massive structure, which is, you know, 535 feet long and 359 feet high. They had to build it, you know, 1,100 yards from the site and then figure out how to transport this thing. They basically set up train tracks and just move this thing into place and set it down over the reactor. And there's a cool video, you know, there'll be links in the show notes of it, and it's like this high-speed photo of this thing, like, slowly getting moved into place. And it's like they've got like the perfect cutout of the building on one side of it. So it just looks like this big metal tube is like slowly, you know, eating the building. Cause it just, there's like, looks like there's like no gaps between when it like goes over the building. It's like, you know, definitely a big technological marvel to build this thing.
Oh man, like just the sheer, you know, amount of engineers that you would need to, you know, design this, you know, and not only that, but, you know, the people to actually build this thing, you know, yeah, to those specifications. I mean, you know, I was kind of reading the article here. So to kind of put it in perspective, you're talking about a building that's 535 feet long, 354 feet high. And, you know, basic...
weighs as much as 3.5 Eiffel Towers. Much an Eiffel Tower weighs.
Hold on.
But it's big. Yeah, and it cost $1.6 billion to make.
What's funny?
Gigantic.
How much does the Eiffel Tower, and the very first search, is weigh? So, 7.3 million kilograms.
Okay.
So, that's 7,300 tons.
Damn. And this is 3.5 times that.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a big damn metal building. And like I said, the video, especially if you've got like OCD and you like watching things fit together very nicely, it's a cool video to watch because this thing slides into place.
It's like building Inception.
Yeah, it looks like there's not like a foot of clearance between spots where it's like, you know, slow, you know, taking over the building, and then like, you know, big steel doors like plug the gaps once it's over the building. But yeah, this is, I mean, shows what, you know, people can do when they come together and work on a project. Because this is not only something that the Russian government, you know, worldwide governments, you know, funded and worked on this thing. Because, like I said, if it were to be exposed, you know, it wouldn't just be a local disaster. It'd be almost a worldwide disaster if the, you know, the radiation actually got out.
That is interesting. That's crazy, like, to think about. I mean, I can't even see in the video and stuff. I mean, could you imagine seeing that in person? Like, just this monumentous structure, like...
Yeah, it's hard to almost, like, fathom the scale of it, you know, until you see people, like, walking next to this giant fucking thing. Speaking of technological marvels, you ever thought about pooping in space?
I mean... I read the book, you know, Everything Poops.
In space. Well, apparently, you know, even though space exploration technology has advanced far beyond, you know, what it was in the early 60s, the one thing that hasn't advanced very far is how you go to the bathroom in space. Pretty much, astronauts just wear diapers underneath their spacesuits. And that can kind of become an issue now that we are going into deeper space, talking about a Mars mission, and where people will have to spend, you know, say if there's an emergency situation and the ship loses air pressure and they have to spend 7-8 days in their suits, they need a way to dispose of waste. So NASA has kind of come up with a challenge. They are, you know, asking for submissions of ideas of how to deal with liquid, solid, and gaseous waste in a spacesuit. The rules are it has to be kind of automatic, you know, no using your hands, and it has to last for up to, I think it said 144 hours, which is basically like around six days.
So it sounds to me like you need a spacesuit with a built-in boudet.
Yeah. You know, and the prize is if you know, you come up with a good idea, it's $30,000 to the winning submission of the, you know, NASA poop challenge.
Interesting. And here I was thinking about the other ways you could make $30,000, like selling a kidney.
Yeah, it's called the Hero X campaign, and I believe it goes through like the middle of December. So if you have any space poop ideas, you need to submit them now before time.
So submit all your shitty ideas to NASA ASAP.
Yeah. And they said this also would have, you know, because, like I said, you know, liquid, solids, and gas all act differently in space. So it's traditional methods may not, you know, you could build a better diaper, I guess.
Yeah, you definitely don't want an upper decker in your spacesuit.
No, you don't want like, you know, sticker bars floating up in your mask. It's going to be a bad day. And you know, they're saying this also could have effects on, you know, here on Earth. Like you said, the medical industry is very interested in this technology because, you know, if you have someone who's bedridden, it's, you know, would be much easier if they had some kind of automatic waste disposal system to hook these people up instead of having to move them out of the bed to, you know, use the bathroom and, you know, back and forth. If they could just, you know, leave someone in place, it would be a little bit, you know, easier on the patient and probably the people, you know, taking care of them as well.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to go to the drawing board.
My idea was like a, because you can't open the suit. You're going to like lose pressure. There needs to be like a airlock, you know, in the suit. Just, you know, everything gets sucked into the airlock and then you can open it up and vent the poo to space.
Yeah, I mean, I
that's not a fallen star. That's a turd.
Shit, it's entering Earth's orbit and atmosphere. Great. Turd makes impact with land. Shit falling from space.
Oh.
Don't get taken out by a falling space poop.
Instead of whatever, was it? NASA, we have a problem. NASA, the shit just got real.
Shit just hit the fan. Oh. I'm almost wondering, like, you know, have a button or something that would activate, you know, some type of suction or something to dispose of it, like
butt vacuum
or fluid vacuum. I don't know, like, what happens if you got a vomit or something? Like,
oh, that's gonna be a bad day.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in an air-free environment where you can't take your helmet off.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, you're just gonna have to deal with it.
I think you need to adapt a face hugger.
Oh, there you go. Something that looks like a face hugger, but for your butt. Get rid of all the poo. Speaking of, you know, it's not science without a weird computer thing. Some scientists now are saying they develop an artificial intelligence program that can predict future criminals based on their facial features.
This sounds like grounds for profiling.
Hey, yeah.
I'm not saying it's profiling, but it's profiling.
I mean, yeah, we're not allowed to profile anymore, but now we can have a computer that'll do it for us, yeah. Talk about, you know, technology advancing humankind. Or, in this case, Skynet hunting people down. It's be like that movie, the Minority Report with Tom Cruise, the pre-crime task force. Basically, like this, two scientists from Shanghai Jiao Tang University basically came up with, you know, that this computer algorithm, you know, they showed it 1,886 mugshots with, you know, about half of them being actual criminals. And this AI was able to predict which ones were the criminals, you know, with 90% accuracy. They say the lip curvature, the eye corner distance, and the mouth-nose angle were some of the, you know, factors that it used to predict whether or not this person would have the potential to be a criminal. So I'm wondering if it's genetic or if just criminals all have like a certain scowl or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of heard of like, I don't know, that guy just looks guilty. Yeah, according to the computer, it
could be that big scar that indicates, you know, maybe made a bad life decision.
But I mean, there was old studies that, you know, have since been disproven that, you know, they basically, you know, measuring criminals' body types and stuff like that were, you know, pre-fingerprints, you know, were like, oh, well, this person has this certain body type, they're more likely to be a criminal, which, you know, since then science is like, this is all bullshit. But, you know, this, you know, computer program that they're playing with here, you know, like I said, it, you know, picked these people out of the crowd. But then again, it could be something as if, you know, the people that have mugshots are not as happy in their photos as the people that were not criminals. Yeah, because, you know, certain, I say, stress and lifestyle choices may have certain physiological effects on the body. So it may not be a thing that, you know, even though it's able to pick criminals out of the lineup, there's no saying that, you know, because these people look this way, they're going to be criminals. It's just say people that are criminals develop these traits. It's kind of a little bit weak science.
Yeah, I don't know. I just see a lot of margin for error here, but you know, yeah. Who knows? I mean, it's science, so I mean, there's got to be some sort of a rule somewhere.
Yeah, so Skynet may have something to be able to detect the human resistance someday.
Very, very interesting.
But stupid. Another weird science fact. Apparently your cat, if you have a cat, which we don't, they have parasites that can make you into bondage.
Very interesting.
There is a...
So is that why I see so many, like, cat photos and FetLife pictures?
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, they recently did a study. There is a... And I believe we may have even talked about this at one point. Parasite called Toxoplasma gondii. That basically this thing can only breed inside a cat's, you know, stomach, I guess. So it infects other life forms. Like it'll infect, you know, rats and mice and bugs and stuff, and actually makes them more attracted to the smell of cat urine. And, you know, so they are more likely to get eaten by cats. So the parasite can then enter the cat's body to reproduce. So they wanted to see if this, you know, parasite had a similar effect on humans. And they found in, you know, with, you know, survey evidence, you know, people that were detected to be infected by this parasite were more likely to be attracted to bondage and more violent, you know, fetishes. But conversely, these people, the parasite also released, you know, dopamine to make you think everything's okay. So these people were less likely, even though they were more attracted to those things, they were less likely to actually be involved in them because the dopamine in their system just kept them a little bit more chill. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird, you know, converse reaction.
It's the yin to the yang.
So, you know, it builds bunch of closet freaks, but none of them actually want to, you know, try it out. That's why they say.
Maybe they do. Maybe they do. There's a wealth of untapped opportunity.
So if you go to a girl's house and she's got a bunch of cats, yeah.
Time to break out the whips, chains, and handcuffs. Baby, let's rock and roll.
I see you have a cat. I happen to have handcuffs. What does that mean? Don't worry about it. I'll explain it later. It's science. Trust me.
I read it on the internet. It must be true.
Yes. Hey, man, it was on IFL Science. I mean, it's got to be true. And with that, we'll be right back.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yay!
Yeah, so, you know, let's go ahead and get started. So 2016 has been rather a shitty year for us nerds and geeks, and just, you know, whether you're, you know, fans of music, movies, whatever, it's been a hell of a year.
Yeah.
You know, so not most necessarily the most recent news, but, you know, definitely some things have happened since our last recording. So Ron Glass has passed away. You know, folks will know him, you know, for, you know, Barney Miller as well as, you know, Firefly. He passed away at the age of 71.
Yeah, that's Shepherd Book, one of the coolest characters in Firefly. And I said, as a, you know, kid, I used to watch, you know, for when they'd show old TV show, I used to watch a lot of Barney Miller because I, you know, liked pretty much all cop stuff. And
yes.
he was always cool on there one of the detectives.
Yeah. So, you know, it just really sucks, man.
And he was also the guy that brought Coulson back to life in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He was one of the doctors that worked on Coulson.
You know, this one came, you know, it sucks. You know, we're sitting at the cigar shop and I, you know, a very Brady movie or, you know, something had came on and, you know, so we're sitting down watching some of the Brady Bunch stuff and, you know, damn it if Florence Henderson doesn't pass away, you know, and folks will know her as, you know, Carol Brady, and she passed away at the age of 82. So, you know, just kind of a crappy 2016. Like, I'm just ready for this year to be over with.
Yeah, currently all the Brady kids are still alive, but we've lost both parents and the maid.
So, you know, fast forward and, you know, yeah, pay your homage. You know, life is short. Live it to the fullest. So, up next, there can be only one. Oh, wait, maybe not. Maybe there can be multiple. So, apparently, we're getting a Highlander reboot, you know, with Chad Stahelski, maybe?
Yeah, the director of
John Wick, yes.
Who is also directing Deadpool, isn't he?
No. That's the other director from John Wick. It's kind of funny that, you know, we get two John Wick directors that are, you know, doing vastly different projects. But, you know, I know how much of a fan you are of reboots, so, you know, I just had to throw it out there. And
I don't know if it's done right. Yeah, because I always like a good Highlander movie. Have we had any news on casting or anything yet?
As of yet, I don't know too much about it. Apparently the project's been in development since roughly 2009. Excuse me.
I know the guy who played the Kurgan in the original movie was wanting to play the Ramirez role. He was kind of campaigning for that. So that would be an interesting take on it. Him playing the Sean Connery role. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies that's been around long enough.
Well, I mean, to give, you know, some credit, you know, blah, I freaking lost my train of thought.
It's not one of those that I'm like so against a reboot, because I mean, we had the Highlander series and how Duncan MacLeod took over some of the movies and stuff. So it's not like there's not been a different Highlander already. So, I mean, it could be interesting.
And I mean, you know, to give, you know, Chad some credit here, you know, I mean, he, you know, worked, he was a stuntman that did a lot of stuff for The Hunger Games, The Wolverine, and Iron Man 2, and also was a second unit director for Captain America Civil War, The Hunger Games Catching Fire, and
friggin' John Wick. I mean, it's, if nothing else, this movie's going to have some badass action.
Yes, so, you know, I mean, yeah, I don't know. There's some potential if it's done right. You know, I'd just be curious on, you know, casting and everything else, and, you know, see where it goes. You know, fast forwarding a little bit now, we'll talk about Netflix. Netflix has just did something really cool that a lot of people have been asking for a long time. Yep. And, you know, basically what they've done is you can now download Netflix shows for offline viewing.
Yeah, because, I mean, pretty much if, you know, I'm, you know, paying for the service, yeah, I should be able to watch that stuff anytime, you know, not just, you know, if I have a internet connection. So that's kind of cool that you can, like, you know, download stuff and watch it later, especially with, I don't know, watching stuff on my phone. If, you know, I have unlimited data, so I don't give a fuck, but, you know, other people that don't have unlimited data, it's hard to watch a Netflix show on your mobile device without just eating up data. But if you can hook up to a Wi-Fi and download it and then watch it wherever, you know, that's kind of a cool option.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that would be great, you know, for weekend getaways where, you know, if you're going to be in, you know, cabin or whatever the case is, and, you know, you get a day of
Wi-Fi,
crappy weather that you can't really, you know, get out and explore anything. I mean, it might be a great way to, you know, hey, you know, spend some quality time, you know.
Because I've been places even with unlimited data, you know, I don't get enough of a freaking signal to watch anything. So that'd be kind of cool if, you know, if you go ahead and stock up on a couple shows or, you know, whatever you're going to binge watch and take it with you that weekend. You know, even if you're in the middle of nowhere, you can just catch up on your, you know, Luke Cage or iZombie or whatever you're watching.
Absolutely. You know, in our case, it maybe end up being Yoga Hosers.
Yeah,
need to get around to seeing that. I was super stoked to find out that it's on Netflix.
Yeah, that's one I've not been able to catch anywhere yet.
So Aquaman, we've got a release date, which is set for, you know, late 2018. And looking at the trailers and stuff, I mean, I think Aquaman is gonna be pretty cool. I mean,
yeah, I've not seen any. I mean, I've seen Aquaman from the Justice League trailer that came out. And, you know, if you think Aquaman, old Super Friends, he was always kind of the lamest of the superheroes. But Jason Momoa looks like a badass. And the whole scene of him, like, you know, chugging a bottle of whiskey and then walking into a big-ass wave, I'm like, a bad dude.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people's going to recognize Jason, especially if they're, you know, fans of a little series called Game of Thrones. I don't know anybody that, you know, hasn't got suckered into that one too heavily yet.
And I remember from Stargate Atlantis, he was badass on that as well. And a legitimate badass. There's a video going around of him, like, chugging a beer and throwing axes. I'm like, this dude's a man.
Yeah, absolutely. So the official date is going to be October 5th. So, you know, that'll be one that I'll absolutely have to, you know, check out in theaters once it comes out. And talk a little bit about some video game news. I've been sucked into video games lately. It's bad to become a gamer again.
Yeah.
but a game that I'm looking forward to that I've always, you know, enjoyed is Marvel vs. Capcom. And, you know, so they're going to come out with a new one called Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite.
Does it go in space like, you know, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare?
I don't think so. You know, it's set to come out sometime in, you know, 2017. You know, you're going to get Ryu, Mega Man X, Iron Man, Captain Marvel, Captain America. You know, we did get some of our...
I used to always mess people up, some Wolverine on that game. The freaking Berserker Barrage was the move.
Yes. You know, and I just always liked the play style, you know, where you can go, you know, actually have, you know, 2v2 battles versus, you know, the traditional 3v3, which, you know, was a little bit different than a lot of your standard fighting games, you know. I mean, Mortal Kombat kind of introduced multiple characters or whatever, but, you know, in this case, you're going to have the opportunity to, you know, just have a couple of folks on a team, and, you know, we did get some gameplay footage from, you know, the Capcom Cup tournament, and, dude, freaking next-gen consoles, man, this shit just looks like fire.
I mean, if we're going to do a Marvel game, we need Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3. That's what I want. Or they did Mortal Kombat versus DC, get Mortal Kombat versus Marvel.
Oh, that would be
Iron Man versus Scorpion.
Yeah. Or you get Iron Man versus, you know, freaking Sektor, you know, some of the other robots and stuff. Like,
oh, that'd be War Machine versus...
You know, let's see, you know, I don't know, maybe even through, you know, freaking Wolverine against Baraka or something. It's a battle of the claws.
Damn.
So I'm pretty stoked about that game. You know, also in video game news, Telltale Games, they're known for developing, you know, story-based games. They did, you know, quite a few. You know, the most recent one I played was The Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead, and then they had the, the Borderlands game as well.
But they are making a Guardians of the Galaxy.
The fuck?
Yeah, in 2017. So, you know, if you want to make, you know, Rocket make some bad decisions where Groot has to try to intervene and hopefully he doesn't push the detonate all button, that'll segue us into another tidbit news. The freaking Guardians of the Galaxy 2 trailer that we got.
It's so awesome.
And baby Groot is just freaking kicking ass.
Yes, there's a whole sequence where Rocket is trying to explain the plot where there's a bomb and he's like, whatever you do, don't hit this button because it will detonate the bomb immediately and kill us all. And he's like, tell me what it has said to you.
I am
Groot. I am Groot. And goes, no, that's the death button. Try it again. And he's like, I am Groot. Yeah. I am Groot. I am Groot. And he's like, no, don't hit the death button.
Like, I just freaking love their interactions together.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely awesome. And then, you know, they're toward the end, freaking Groot running off with the console and rocking. This can't be good.
He's like, I am Groot. He's like, oh, shit. That and the whole thing with Drax looks hysterical. You know, freaking there's like somebody who can read minds. And he's like, you know, you have sexual love for Gamora. And Drax like, she just told everybody your darkest secret. You must be so embarrassed. Do me next. I don't know, Drax is becoming one of my favorite characters because his like whole like
I mean he just started
says
out
things
like
it is.
Yes. I mean, you know, he started out kind of like just the, you know, the brute, and now, you know, he's starting to get some of that, you know, quirkiness to him, and you know, like
look in the first trailer, you need a hug.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. Come here.
So I'm a big fan of theme parks.
Okay.
Love adrenaline rides, that type of stuff. A little bit of an adrenaline junkie. So Nintendo theme parks are coming to Universal Studios.
Woohoo! I mean, they have to do something to replace the old Nickelodeon studios that closed down.
Yeah, so, you know, this is working with, you know, the freaking Mario creator. You know,
I just want live-action Mario Kart.
Yeah, I'm, you know, curious as to exactly what that would be. I mean, almost do it, you know.
Do a track with, like, maybe a VR, like, Oculus rig or something to give you the whole, like, you know, weird optics of, you know, you have the video can go with the track. And then you could also, like,
well,
you
that
know,
or you have a track, but, you know, have bumper cars on the track or something. So that way you can, you
even
can
then,
actually
like some
pit
of the,
people or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, like I said, they could have some kind of, like, stuff where, like, oh, I've got the turtle or something, and when I throw it, there's something that like locks your brakes up and makes your car stop for a second or spin you out. You know, just, I mean, they could do some cool random stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so that would be freaking awesome. I mean, Mario Kart's dangerous, though. We've talked about, you know, how bad that game can be for friendships.
Like, live action, man, there's people getting in fights.
It's like, what do you do? Oh, I'm the bouncer for Mario Kart.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm really curious to see what all it has to, you know, entail. It's going to, you know, kind of gather, you know, try to cater to gamers of, you know, all ages. So, you know, I mean.
Live action Donkey Kong. You're having to jump barrels and stuff.
Yeah. That'd be a freaking workout.
Yeah. A freaking parkour track.
So, I mean, I just think it'd be awesome to see, you know, so much of, you know, Nintendo's video game stuff come to life. I mean, I don't know. I think I'd enjoy it. And then also a little bit about theme parks. This time we're going to talk about, you know, Disney World. So Epcot, they are going to turn Spaceship Earth into the Death Star.
Yeah, Spaceship Earth is that big chrome ball in the middle of Epcot Center.
So, you know, it's a little bit misleading because they're actually just going to do it with a projector. but it's still kind of cool that, you know, oh shit, it's the Death Star.
Oh, because that was the whole thing. I was like, when they announced that they're eventually going to build the whole Star Wars land Disney park, I think that should have been the centerpiece. Instead of like the giant ball for Epcot Center, they should build a giant Death Star in the middle of that bastard. Make it some kind of ride.
That's no moon. That's a space station. So, anything else that I forgot to cover in our limited time?
I've not watched the trailer yet, but I saw that there is a new Mummy movie and the trailer just released. So I've not had a chance to look anything up that, but you know, the old Mummy movies were cool. So look that trailer up and give it a try.
Do we really need another Mummy movie?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know.
I heard Tom Cruise is in this one, so shit could get weird.
Yeah, he's the mummy's chasing him in his I-8.
Yeah. That's what they should do. They start to do like mix-up movies where it's like Mission Impossible versus the Mummy or
Mummy Impossible.
Fast and the Furious Transformer crossover. That's an idea right there.
God.
Expendables versus G.I. Joe.
And the A-team to decimate them all. I pity the fool.
There you go. The A-team needs to show up in the next Expendables movie. Yes.
Like, hey, I heard you guys could use a hand.
I mean, yeah, they're bringing back old 80s action star. I mean, Hannibal's dead, but you know, pretty much the rest of the cast is still around. We could get B.A., Murdoch, and Faceman back in a freaking Expendables movie.
Yeah. Can we start a petition?
That needs to happen. Oh, and with that, of course, check out Strike Force Energy at strikeforceenergy.com. Don't forget to use the code CigarNerds on your orders. We're on You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found, on our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com, and we're on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Cigar Nerd Pod. Also, pick up your, it's the holiday season, pick up your cool Cigar Nerd smoking shirts at Real Men Smoke Cigars. And with that, I will leave you with one of my favorite quotes from the bad guy of Expendables 1. Being wealthy is very good. It allows people to be the real asswipes nature's intended them to be. And we're out! And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.